In 38, you had an accident, 1938.
7 years old, right.
What was that?
In those days, in the 30s, you had pop stands. You could build a little wooden pop stand, put it in your front yard, go down to the Coca-Cola bottling company and get fruit drinks, you know, strawberry, grape, whatever, plus Coke and so forth. You buy them and bring them out to your pop stand and sell them to your neighborhood kids for nickel apiece. So I'm 7 years old, and I love strawberry pop. Mother had gone somewhere. Dad was, of course, working. I had a nickel, and my brother had this pop stand, so I paid my brother the nickel that I had and had a strawberry pop. Well, I wanted another one. My brother wouldn't give me one. He said, "You got to have money or I'm not going to give you another one." You know, that's how older brothers are. With mother being gone, I called my father at work. I said, "Dad, I want a strawberry pop, and I don't have any money, and my brother wanted me to pay him the nickel." He said, "Where's your mother?" And I said, "Well, she's gone." He said, "Well, son, don't call me at work. You've already had one strawberry pop." I said, "Well, can I borrow a nickel from Mr. Nofsker, the next-door neighbor?" He said, "No, son, you don't need to do that. Don't do that." Well, I went to Mr. Nofsker, and I said, "My dad said I could borrow a nickel from you." Mr. Nofsker thought it was real cute. They were great friends. He gave me a nickel, and now got me a strawberry pop. Well, when Dad came home, Mr. Nofsker jokingly knocked on my dad's door and said, "You owe me a nickel. Your son took a nickel off me, you know." So Dad called me in. He said, "Son, I told you not to borrow a nickel from Mr. Nofsker." I said, "I didn't." He said, "Don't stand there and lie to me. I know you did. He told me you did." I said, "No, I didn't." So this went on. He said, "Son, you go upstairs, and you're not having any dinner until you're man enough to come down and admit to me that you lied to me, because I know you did." And I said, "No, I didn't." So I went upstairs, and I was crying. My grandmother lived with us at the time. It was summer. Again, no air conditioning in those days. Mother had eaten dinner and gone out and was painting the swing, and I was crying, leaning against the screen, and it came open, and I fell two stories head first on a concrete porch. I actually, at this moment, even at age 80, can close my eyes and remember laying across my mother and grandmother's lap in the back seat of the car, Dad driving like a bat out of hell to Wesley Hospital. The treatment, and this has a big significance in my life, I'm not being dramatic, it does. I had all my head wrapped. I was bleeding through every orifice, eyes, nose, mouth, and ears. They were worried about all kinds of things, gangrene setting in, blood clots, brain damage, which there probably was, and just everything you can imagine. There were no treatment. The treatment was, and here's what the doctor told my mother and father, "I want him with his head on the pillow for 8 weeks. Don't lift his head off the pillow for 8 weeks. Well, can you imagine a seven-year-old boy in those days, no television? What do? You listen to the radio. That's all there was to do. I couldn't even get up to go to the bathroom. I wrote for the pictures of some of the actors in the plays they had on radio. I listened to all the play-by-play guys, you know, Bill Stern, all those great guys from way back then. Just became enamored with radio. So at the end of 8 weeks, I got up and fell flat on my face because my legs had atrophied. They didn't know in those days. So I was still a sickly person because of all this, and I had terrible leg aches growing up. So the guy said, "You fall on your head and you have leg aches." That tells a lot. So that's why it has great significance, because that's the genesis of my interest in radio, and I never lost it. I would invent little baseball games and play with dice, had this game, and I'd announce it, and the windows were open, and I'd play like the guys I'd heard on the radio, you know, "Oh, it's a base hit to left field." And all the neighbors thought I was nuts, you know, would kid mom and dad, say, "Can't you close the windows? We don't have to listen." And then after a game each day, I'd make a little newspaper of how my game came out and put it on dad's high boy. He thought it was cute for a while, then thought, "This kid's got a problem." So that's the long answer. My head injury in 1938 led to my career in broadcasting.
Well, you were real creative at that age then, obviously, to entertain yourself that way.
Well, I had to. There you are, laying in bed.
Were you able to put these two together here in 38, 7, 8 years old? Then you go to baseball games. Did you think early on that you would be a play-by-play announcer?
Well, I don't think I actually thought that, but it was in the back of my mind, obviously, because I would announce every day my own little games as I made them up as I went. I would make a little card on all the major league players, what I was doing, and trying to imitate those announcers.
Who would have been the voice of the Oklahoma City Indians back then?
Kurt Gowdy, of course, came in later. He broadcast the Oklahoma City Indians.
Was he there for many years?
Yeah, he's from Edmond, Oklahoma. In fact, his sister still lives there.
He married a girl from Oklahoma City, didn't he? Jerry Dawkins. So these voices, then, you would perhaps enamored by them.
Yeah, I would try to mimic what they were doing, you know, obviously, because I thought they were it.